Hey, I'd like to welcome you all. You have found the Third Space Podcast, and I am your host, Bob Fabi. And today we have a special segment I like to call The Priest and the Millennial. Joining me today on the podcast is Caleb Killian. Caleb, say hello.
Hello.
Hello, Caleb. Caleb is a graduate of Arizona State University, and Caleb does pretty much everything in post-production. Is that right?
Do you like not everything, but a lot.
Yeah, but you post-production guys would say that, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, but I can't say that I do everything, because then all the other post-production guys will be like, hey, that's not true.
Yeah, well, that sounds like something they would say. Anyways, you know, you give Caleb a video, he makes it beautiful. You give him some sound stuff, he makes it sound great. You know, he does lights for live events. Caleb is great at making other things great. How's that? That's a good, that was good.
That should be my slogan.
I think, hey, I'm Caleb, and I make other things great.
Yeah, other things sounds weird, though.
Okay.
I make other things great, but not myself. Is that what I'm trying to say?
I don't know. Maybe that's a little weird. You could say I make people great. Anyways, I have a face for radio, and he actually made a video of me that wasn't so bad. So Caleb's good at what he does. I'm grateful to work with him, and super grateful that he is joining me on segments of my podcast like today. And what we're going to take a look at is I've written a book. It's called Not My Jesus. And Caleb's kind of pressed in to the book, and we're going to have an opportunity to chat about it, kind of thoughts and experiences, and a free-flowing dialogue. So glad that you have joined us today. One of the reasons I wrote the book, I think, is that so many people like to bring Jesus into different arguments or kind of use him as a trump card not intended to be a political comment, a trump card. But as a way of saying, oh, well, Jesus said this, and then like that ends the argument. Have you felt that way ever, Caleb? Have you come across people who do that?
Not to that depth, I don't think. You know, I think there's always stuff out there that plays into a little bit, and I'm sure that probably has come up. But for myself, you know, I guess in my life, I've kind of been, to some degree, more of the faith-based oriented person in my group of people. Mm-hmm. So there's not a whole lot of conversation of, well, Jesus said this. Now, the great thing is I do have a couple men in my life who are very, very faith-based and definitely are the types of characters who help me on my journey with God, who are just there to ask those questions. But I guess I don't take it in the same nature. Mm. That it's more of them giving helpful, loving advice based on scripture, mm-hmm, at that point.
Gotcha.
So I think context is important in that thing. Who's telling you this? What's happening in that nature?
You mean the internet doesn't always have the truth?
Well, the internet's kind of a different character in itself.
You don't get all your truth from social media, Caleb?
Yeah, no. I'm gonna say no on that one for sure.
Full disclosure, do you have an Instagram account?
I do.
Twitter?
Very recently, yes.
Uh-huh. Facebook?
Yes, but I don't use it that much.
Mm-hmm. MySpace?
No.
Of course.
Well, if I do, I don't know about it.
Somewhere in Eastern European country has a MySpace.
I did have one once upon a time. I don't necessarily remember deleting it, so there might technically be a Caleb.
You would have been like 5 when that was on.
Probably close, or
yeah.
8.
Yeah,
I think it was 8.
Your song for your MySpace would have been like a Barney tune or something, because you would have been a wee lad at that point.
A wee lad,
he was,
yes,
young. We were talking off mic about the difference between Caleb's age and my age, and somehow the pyramids of Egypt came up, you know, this 2,000-year reference. So there's a bit of distance between us age-wise, but I think it's a good thing to engage in conversation with people who are younger than you or possibly older, not necessarily wiser. But anyway, so Caleb, when you think about how you see Jesus portrayed or how you hear about Jesus used in our culture, do you see that as being a kind of a twisted version, or do you see it as like, this really resonates deeply with me?
You know, I think it's been kind of all facets of that. Surprisingly, what's funny is I hadn't really seen Jesus or opinions of Jesus being kind of twisted until I became a visual artist. And particularly one of the aspects that I do for my job at Music Serving the Word is I put visual media up on screen behind a sermon. And what's been really interesting with that is I've had conversations with many congregation members about the types of imagery that I put in. And the most notable has definitely been the North American, I guess, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus, which ironically have made their way not to be in my visual collection anymore because I've had more comments about that than anything else. But it really did just make me think a lot about how people view Jesus, and even more so than that, the different views of Jesus, how their personal perception sometimes, I guess, kind of draws that view in an element. So, yeah, I guess it's been more of a recent notion that I've understood. It's not something I have particularly been, I guess, educated well on, but I've definitely noticed it more recent.
Well, and I think you're tasked with a challenge. You know, if you are in a public setting and you're asked to put up a picture of Jesus, you're going to get everybody's opinion about what that image did or did not do, or what they agree with or did not agree with. And that would be challenging. I hadn't thought of it necessarily from that perspective. I'll bet you did. You have gotten some feedback around that.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey trying to kind of walk that line a little bit. You know, because it's the one challenge of, you know, there's only a finite amount of images out there that are usable.
Right.
And then on top of that, that gets subtracted by, okay, well, you know, this is Sunday school morning, preschool types of images. This is right. Not a traditional
clip
view.
Clip art versus something else.
Yeah, and so, you know, your use on that tends to get kind of determined just by what you have available. You know, so there's been some great images that I thought looked really good aesthetically. But maybe had a couple of alterations, blue eyes, you know, being kind of the normal one. And people latch onto that. It's been very eye-opening to see how much people latch onto that.
Yeah, it's strange for me because I, you know, my undergrad's in history. I think that way I kind of ground things historically, and I just don't know a lot of blue-eyed Jewish people. And so it's always a question of whether Jesus was actually Jewish or not. And, you know, years ago, the movie Talladega Nights came out. Will Ferrell and Ricky Bobby in the car race, NASCAR scene. And you know, it's not necessarily a great film or anything, but I remember seeing it. And that segment around the prayer is absolutely priceless. And before I ever wrote the book and used that in my book, I used that in sermons, actually. Because there were points where Jesus literally asked people, who do you say that I am? You know, he asked Peter that question, and Peter confessed that Jesus was the Christ. And there's this huge grappling that you see within that first century context where Jesus is walking around and people really are asking, like, who is this guy and what's going on? But I thought the way that the prayer, if you haven't seen the prayer for Talladega Nights, Google it or YouTube it. There's a couple versions. One is edited. So if your ears are tender, you might want to choose the edited version. But it's brilliant because Ricky Bobby, Will Ferrell, starts praying, and he's praying to baby Jesus as opposed to a different Jesus. And there are images that people bring up when they start to pray. People will say, you know, they'll talk about God, they'll talk about the Father, they'll talk about Jesus, they'll pray to the Holy Spirit. But that, you know, I know for me, I'm a pretty visual person, and I will bring up a picture in my mind of Jesus or maybe something else while I'm praying and talking to him about things. And so the fact that Will Ferrell's character brings up a baby is just super funny. And then his wife says, you know, it's a bit odd, you know, praying to a baby. But it begs the question, why is that weird, right? I mean, what is it about that that's so strange? But you get further into the scene and, you know, some pretty funny stuff happens. What did you think when you read that, Caleb?
Well, first of all, I have to disagree. That's probably my favorite movie of all time, and I think it's fantastic, and I suggest everybody go watch it right now. That's great. I think that is definitely one of Will Ferrell's better movies, and especially that scene itself. I love the way that it's blocked. I love the dialogue that was written for it. Mm-hmm. Me being kind of a movie connoisseur in the video world, I definitely have looked at it in that way a little bit too. So I definitely, you know, like that scene quite a bit. And yeah, I guess the whole notion that they're kind of arguing of just the different versions of Jesus. I love, what was it? Cal's character. Mm-hmm. He brings up the wearing a tuxedo suit Jesus that he, right. You know,
I like to picture Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt. That's yes. What he says. Cause it says like, I want to be formal, but I'm here to party too. Cause I like to party. So I like my Jesus to party.
Well, and I think that, yeah, I think that statement right there kind of sums it up perfectly. It's I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party too. Right. And I think that is the biggest character that we all take. Mm. You know, going back to the blue eyed Jesus, why did I never know I am a blonde haired, blue eyed person. Mm-hmm. So why do I not see that when I look at Jesus? Because yeah. I'm used to seeing that in the mirror, and so it doesn't strike me as opposite of you, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, for sure.
So I think people, they take who they are as people and try and mold Jesus into a version of that, yeah, you know?
Totally.
You know, Cal likes to party, so Jesus likes to party too. Right. I think to some degree, Will Ferrell is a little bit of a childlike character, and mm-hmm. maybe that's why they chose to use the baby Jesus for his particular type of thing. So, yeah, I really love that scene because it, I you know, as comical as that scene is, I think there is kind of a little bit of a unusual under meaning to it.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, the book addresses that very nicely.
Yeah, and it betrays lots of theological perspectives, even from Carly, his wife. You know, she says, you know, hey, first of all, we got to pray, right? I've been slaving over this for hours, even though it's KFC and Taco Bell stuff. But, you know, she gets put off by how somebody else is praying. And then she's like, I want you to do this prayer good so God will let us win. And so even in her approach of who Jesus and God is, it's kind of that idea that, well, if you do the right thing, then God will do the right thing. And the right thing, of course, is answering my prayer and winning because we did the prayer right. Yeah. I just go, well, maybe not.
Well, and it, you know, I think it's a lot deeper than that too. That's the part that's not addressed, is that it's not just the prayer, it's the action afterwards.
Right.
But that can be missed. I've definitely missed that before. I've prayed for things and not acted upon the prayer afterwards. I mm-hmm. think it's a two-part process. It's not just coming to Jesus and asking for something, but it's following up after that. It's continuing right. the relationship and, you know, moving forward right. with him in that as well.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, and I think when you think about how the characters orient to that conversation, you know, And, you know, the kids jump in and they're saying they want to, you know, I picture Jesus fighting off ninjas and samurais or whatever. And you know, the dad who's Chip, I think, you know, he's he says he was a man. He had a beard, you know, and he's kind of asking for a little bit of sanity in the middle of all of that. And I think that there's always a sense where we have this desire to make Jesus like us, or that he's similar to us, or at least that he would be on our side or on my side because he's like us. And I will never forget the first time I traveled to Africa, and I saw a depiction of the Holy Family, similar to what you have done in visuals. I actually saw a painting of it. And of course, they were black. Joseph was black, Mary was black, and baby Jesus was black. And why were they black? Because I was in Africa, and that's how Africans think about Jesus, the same way that we would think he was a, you know, maybe a Northern European white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus. And so even in that moment, there was that kind of like this sense of like, well, of course he would be black. But is that who he really was? And again, pressed in for me to be really faithful about asking that question. Not just, you know, what did he look like, but how does he function, and how does my own desire and my own kind of makeup change how I think about how Jesus operates?
Yeah, I'm actually, you know, I don't have too much to comment on that. I'm really curious about the culture there in that, and I would love to be able to see, like go there and see some of that depiction, you know, the paintings and things that would just be a very different perspective that I have not seen. So that would definitely be very cool. But I think it does beg the question of, you know, do we as humans go too far with that? You know, do we put our own views on Jesus's image?
Yeah, and not just his image, right? His behavior and how he taught and all that. I mean, I think if there's one thing that's been shown over and over is our ability to twist Jesus into all sorts of things, where people will take a passage out of context and they'll say, well, Jesus said it, and therefore it's blessed or it's okay, or you can justify any behavior you want because Jesus said it. Now, do I pattern my life after Christ and after his teachings? Absolutely. But I try to do it in a way that doesn't just shut the door on all manner of other ways of thinking about it. And I think that I try to take the whole of Jesus' teaching into account and not just a little tiny segment and call it good. I think that's part of why the cover of the book is so compelling. So there's been a lot of discussions. For those of you who don't know about this book, the cover of the book has Jesus in hipster glasses. He's got a John 3:16 shirt on. He's got a cell phone with a selfie because you know, it's a selfie
generation. Selfie culture.
He's got a cup of Starbucks. Some argue that it should be Dutch Brothers. However, Starbucks is superior in every way to Dutch Brothers.
Being a previous Starbucks employee, I will definitely endorse that. Yes, it is better, and Dutch Bros is not.
Right. Yeah, one is massive amounts of sugar, and the other is actual.
I agree. Coffee. That's actually my biggest argument, is that it is, you know, if you like a lot of sugar, definitely go to Dutch Bros.
But I'd just say have a donut. Yeah, and then also there's an American flag and a flag with the Republican and Democratic donkey on there. And to some consternation for some people who've seen it, Jesus has a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And again, I've had the conversations that should actually be a joint. Or was it a joint? I had a question with I spoke at a church where there's a bunch of 20-somethings, and they were like, well, we're having this discussion. Is that a joint or a cigarette? And I said, well, it may make sense to have Jesus have a joint, but that's not what I was going for, just the cigarette.
And actually, I have to say, I think probably an even more appropriate thing than a cigarette would be a vape.
A vape, right.
pin thing. Right. I'm not in that culture. I don't smoke, so I don't know exactly what they're called. But there's been a huge uprising in that, and I could even say that that could be
part of what he had.
You know, another aspect of that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if the cover really is designed to help people engage around the fact that people want to put Jesus on themselves and themselves on Jesus. And so, of course, Jesus would smoke because I smoke. In other words, of course, Jesus would wear a tuxedo t-shirt and party because I like to party.
Because I like party.
Yeah, and so they have this idea. And so, Caleb, when you first saw the cover of the book, what were your thoughts around that?
Question mark? Is that the appropriate way to go about it?
I don't know. What were you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I never really had an opposition to it. I, obviously, being a visual artist, am very open to engaging media. So things that make people question. One of my biggest projects that I've done was a Christmas piece that some would maybe particularly not see as a Christmas piece. It was a very engaging piece at the beginning. It definitely made you kind of come back and rethink your view on Christmas. But with that being said, I enjoy media that calls into question traditional norms. I love media that is controversial and stuff like that. So when it comes to, you know, I definitely acknowledge that it can be controversial, but I also have an affinity for that type of media because I think it can be really compelling and really engaging. And one of my biggest kind of, I guess, draws towards that is I think media that is engaging, whether positive or negative, gets people talking.
Yeah.
And it creates a conversation. And that is something that I think is needed very much in this day and age, is just good, wholesome conversation about hard topics.
If we actually have a conversation, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the other part of it. Sometimes the conversation gets skipped.
Art,
and,
right?
And it, you know, but I mean, it's funny. I went to college in an arts program, and we literally had a class that was dedicated to how to critique and have a conversation with artists. And it taught me a lot how to approach it, how to do it. And I think that is something that needs to be rediscovered in some sense.
Absolutely.
It is very good to have opposing ideas and thoughts on a book cover.
Sure.
And be able to come together and talk about that. So, you know, at the end of the day, I guess I'm not for or against the book cover, but I like that it's compelling and engaging. And really, I have question marks, and it's, you know, it's not the cigarette in the mouth. It's just the thing, you know, I would dig deeper into all of it, you know, the political signs over the American flag. Is that meant to represent something? Is, you know, I think there's deeper means that can be talked about with the cover, and all of that is good and positive conversation, as long as it is a conversation, that there's an asterisk on that, I guess.
Right.
So yeah, for me, I think the book cover, for those of you who haven't seen it out there, I definitely say this is probably the epitome of don't judge a book by its cover. Because if it does make you run away from reading the book, you're missing some value in that. The cover, I think, positively or negatively, will get people to read it and have an opinion. Now, whether that's good or bad, that's to be seen.
Right.
But right. I think just in that notion, it's a really good thing. So.
Yeah, it's been interesting having conversations with people about that, because my intent around the cover is pretty clear right from the beginning. And when I was talking with the artist who put it together, she, you know, we went back and forth, you know, quite a few times and just said, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? But she really understood what I was trying to do, is to say, hey, here's how our culture thinks about Jesus. You know, obviously you got to land somewhere. It could have been far less culturally appropriate, or it could have been far worse in terms of, you know, yeah, I mean, one person brought up heroin needles and, you know, other things. So it could have been, you know, far worse on each end of the spectrum.
Well, and I think there's a vast majority of things you could and couldn't have gone with this cover. You could, sure. I mean, one idea, and we've talked about this mm-hmm. when you were kind of going through the cover was, you know, have the Brady Bunch style squares and multiple depictions of Jesus and different right. avenues on that. I think there's lots of ways to go about it, but really, I think the bottom line is the content that is inside mm-hmm. is where the value is.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing that is engaging about this particular book is I think that this is a avenue, because there is such a compelling cover, that it might attract readers who would not normally be attracted to a book like
yeah,
this.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, and again, you know, when you think about when you're writing something, you know, you do have an audience in mind, you know, you don't, one of the things that they talk about when you're learning how to write is you think about who you're writing to, why you're writing it, you know, and that you keep those people in mind. And I definitely think about people who are in the process of kind of maybe a little bit of a deconstruction of their faith, or maybe they've, kind of been marginalized in their faith, or maybe they've lost faith, or even those who are kind of on the outside, you know. And I'm not saying that there wouldn't be value for other people to read it, but certainly people who have had a negative interaction with Christianity and Christians, I think this book might be helpful in terms of framing some of those interactions up. Because when I mean, across the board, and obviously, you know, you're not going to hear from your critics as much, but across the board, people in their, you know, kind of 40 and under who have seen the cover, one of the first things out of their mouths is, I love that. I love that cover. And I'm always grateful to hear it. And I try to pass that on to the cover artist to let her know that she really nailed it with that. And I think there's probably an equal number of people who say, I don't like the cover, but you don't hear from them because they don't feel the need or desire to necessarily tell. I'm sure the internet will be an arbiter of truth when it comes to what people have to say about that kind of thing. But
yeah, the internet is an interesting piece. I think it, oh gosh, I don't, probably some other podcast I was listening to, but they said that the internet was agnostic. It'll either benefit you or it'll completely just
destroy you.
The lack of more colorful words, destroy you. Yeah. And I think there's some truth to that, but I think in this book's particular case, it'll be a really clear sign of where people are at, and I think that's a great place to be.
Yeah, I think actually it is a tell how you feel about the cover. If you feel like you can't read the book because you don't like the cover, that does say something. It communicates where you're at and what that means. And one of the things that I appreciate about some of the feedback that I've gotten is that I've had feedback from folks on basically all the ends of the spectrum. Pretty strong evangelical academic types, and folks who maybe are living a lifestyle that other people would not agree with in terms of the scriptures. And even on the ends of those spectrums, people have said, boy, we really appreciate this book and we're grateful to have read it. And I'm really grateful that all sorts of types of people are grabbing it. And I hope that as people engage in it, they wrestle pretty deeply with what they find. It's a short book. It's an easy read. It's not as if it's a giant academic text, but it is meant to create conversations. And I was grateful for you to bring that up, because I think so much of what people do today is they create either an echo chamber or they scream. An echo chamber meaning, you know, all they do is they hear their own selves talking back to themselves. So they're surrounding themselves, whether on social media or, you know, through podcasts, or maybe you're doing that now as you're listening to us, you've created an echo chamber with just people who just agree with you. And there's no one outside. Whoever gets a voice in, you don't hear somebody from an opposing view. Or they just shout at each other. You know, we don't agree, and therefore I hate you. just doesn't work. And so I'm grateful to have you bring up the idea of conversation, because we just don't have it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I invite it. I hope that it creates something interesting in the conversation piece, and good or bad, you know, I hope people come and have the conversation.
Sure.
And not create that echo chamber, then not shout, but whether they agree or disagree, create the conversation. Let's have that discussion.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
I think, and it is part of the thing. I'm an Anglican, and the Anglicans say the middle way, both Protestant and Catholic, and I find myself falling in the middle a lot, where I can understand where people are coming from. Having said that, Caleb, you mentioned that kind of the Northern European Jesus is the one that you really maybe resonate with most. Tell me why you think that is.
You know, I think it's, I don't know, call it conditioning. I've grown up seeing the Northern European Jesus. I think young Sunday school coloring books and everything else when you're young, it's just kind of is geared that way. Mm-hmm. And there's not a strong conversation when you're young about the physical look of Jesus. And so, again, I think as a young person, I just imprinted onto him what I saw in the mirror. Mm-hmm. I'm a blonde-haired, blue-eyed individual, and so why would I not draw that in the coloring book? That's right. What I know, that's what I understand.
Or maybe did you see those old kind of those old paintings of Jesus that had that depicted?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I think that is just kind of what I was exposed to. It really was not until I was older, definitely deeper in my faith and deeper in the church, that I started to look deeper into that. Mm-hmm. And then I would even say further than that, it wasn't until I actually had to start using that media in a sermon context, you know, accompanying a sermon, that I looked even deeper and further into that aspect as well. So, yeah, I just don't think it's something that is necessarily articulated when you're younger. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of funny. It does make an imprint on you. Not negatively. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's just something to understand, mm-hmm. you know, and that's something it took me a long time to understand about myself, is that's just, I think, where I came from, mm-hmm. and just making an understanding of, like, that's probably not the truest form of what Jesus looks
actually like. Look like.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there's been a bunch of work done probably in the last 10 years around things like the Shroud of Turin. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's the sheet that they found from the medieval period that actually has what looks to be the image of a man, and, you know, who's been crucified. You know, and people have taken that and they've done all sorts of 3D work with that and actually come up with what they think Jesus might have actually looked like. I don't remember if that was Nat Geo or National Geographic, you know, History Channel or something like that. But there is a desire for people to find out what did Jesus actually look like. And if we know, you know, prophecy was said about Jesus, you know, that this guy had nothing in his form that was going to cause us to go after him and that kind of thing. And so when I think about the prophecies written about a Messiah, and then I look on the wall of some, you know, quasi haloed covered Jesus with this peaceful visage and, you know, this kind of beautiful, you know, pale complexion, you know, very holy and that kind of thing. I think, well, I understand why the artist might want to have created that painting, but it may not actually have anything to do with the historical relevance of how Jesus looked. So I always think that's interesting. And I know that when I wrote this section, I tried to recognize that a lot of people have a lot of different ways of looking at Jesus. And I want to wrap this up by talking about the Westboro Baptist Jesus. And the reason is that I think that most people who are outside of the faith find Christians getting the most press. Because they're from this camp. It seems like the more controversial you are or the louder you are, or the more hate-filled you are, it's easier to grab a sound bite. You know, it's easier to grab a short video clip and try to make a whole case out of something. And unfortunately, there are Christians out there who do use Jesus as a bludgeoning tool. And that's why I put part of the segment in the book, because I don't want to act like that's not happening. You get all the ends of the spectrum about how people look at Jesus. So when you read that, Caleb, what were you thinking? How did that hit you when you read the words from the Westboro Baptist Church website?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Mm. That's definitely a hard one. I think you're right, definitely, in the sense of like scream hatred and you get the sound bite from it. And you know, unfortunately, I think that's a little bit of a media ploy. I think people know that that's what sells and that's what will get the attention mm-hmm. that they want. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't subscribe to that in any way. And actually, prior to reading your book, I purposely stayed away from anything that was around that. The clearest definition that I can definitely relate to that type of being is my college years. Mm-hmm. We had kind of a common space that, you know, was used for lunch and hangs and all of that stuff. But
wait a minute. You mean a third space, Caleb?
Plug it. There you go. Yeah, a third space.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just a common hang ground for our students to come and just chill with friends, mm-hmm. grab some food, nice, great patio area and stuff like that. But in some occasions, it was a vocal ground for some pretty radical faith-based speech mm-hmm. in a public setting. Mm-hmm. And it got very, very colorful, you know, and even for myself, they took no time to understand the people that were around them. Mm-hmm. I had this particular gentleman literally look at me and say that I'm not a Christian man and that I'm a, you know, this or that and this or that. Very colorful language.
So that actually happened to you.
To me, yeah.
So it wasn't happening around you. It happened at you.
Yeah, to happened you. At me. Mm-hmm. I had to ask Jesus to not let me have some colorful words back, to put it nicely. Uh-huh. Because I did get very defensive about that. It's I'm not an overly vocal Christian man. I keep my faith pretty close to the chest, mm-hmm. but I don't ever like being into a position that I am seen otherwise. Mm-hmm. And so this particular gentleman was making that assumption. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to start a conversation with him of, you know, I am a faith-based man. Mm-hmm. I don't deny that I have sinned. That's mm-hmm. human. And I pray every day that God can walk that journey with me. Mm-hmm. And he just continued screaming, and going at, and that was really my first interaction with something at that level.
Right.
And yeah, I think it just goes back to what we talked about earlier. It's have the conversation, don't have the shouting match.
Right.
I would love to sit down and have a conversation with this particular gentleman, mm-hmm. but it wasn't about that to him.
Right.
And I think that is unfortunately what the Westboro kind of outline is. Mm-hmm. It's not a conversation. It's a believe me or you're going to hell, pretty yeah. much.
And to be fair, I mean, I haven't had a conversation with anybody from the church, you know, and so... So it could be that they'd be more than willing to sit down and have a cup of coffee. I don't know. But that's certainly not how they're represented.
Yes, I invite the conversation. I do not invite the platform, mm-hmm. I guess, if that makes sense.
Right.
Is I don't want to be a spectacle for your crowd to look at, as I was this particular day.
Yeah,
with
couldn't
this
have felt
gentleman.
Very good.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I think it's just that's a hard place to be. It's a hard place to be as a Christian man. It's mm-hmm. It was a hard place to be as a Christian man on a campus where I think a lot of people were trying to discover who they are.
Right.
They didn't know if they are a believer or not a believer. And so that's the hard place to be, is where do you take the stand and where do you not? And I mean, for me at that particular moment, it was definitely, we're going to know exactly where I'm at on this subject,
right.
But yeah, I think that's a hard place to be in, just on a general level.
Sure. Yeah. And I think when people decide that, this is what Jesus was like, or this is how Jesus wants me to represent him, there's a part of me that wants to say, good on you. You know, like you're trying to be faithful to what it is that you believe to be true. And to that end, I can say, amen. I'm so grateful that you're willing to do that. I feel that way about anybody with anything that way. I say, I understand why you would do that, or I affirm your right, to do that, to speak that way. Go ahead. When for me, the challenge is that when, it's a misrepresentation or a twisting of Jesus for some other means. Then I have a hard time, because I think, man, wait, what is it that you're wanting to accomplish? And I have had conversations with people like this in the street. My family, if we're ever going somewhere and they see a street preacher, they look at me like, Dad, honey, we don't have time. Or, you know, like they'll go, hey, we'll catch you down the street in just a few minutes or whatever, because part of me is thinking, what is it that you want to do? Tell me what it is about what you're doing that you think is so important. And the hard thing I have about this is when things are so blatantly categorically against what the scriptures have to say. So if you show up at a rally for homosexuals and you say God hates fags, that is just not in the scriptures. And I say to that, you are misrepresenting what Christ had to say. And that's a really clear bias. In the same way that somebody would adopt a Northern European view of Jesus, they've adopted a view that says, here are the things that I find to be offensive. Here are the things that the Bible says you should or shouldn't do, and therefore I'm going to scream at you for practicing what I think you're doing. And it grieves me because even, you know, if you take a look at Cal Naughton, you know, and you say, well, you know, take a look at the baby Jesus, you say, well, Jesus likes to party, I like to party, or vice versa, or Jesus was a baby, or those things. All of those things people do. I practice that too. I'm sure I have views of Jesus that I haven't been able to plumb or whatever. But when the view is predominantly anti, you know, when the identity of Jesus is just about not being something else, and when it's categorically harmful, then I want to press in a little bit more. I want to have one of those conversations that you're talking about. I first try to seek to understand. Help me understand where you're coming from. And then, you know, God willing, change my heart, or hopefully somebody else's heart or mind could change around those types of things. But we do live in a place where most people have pretty equal access to putting out their platform, whether that be the internet or social media, or people have the right to show up wherever they want to show up within reason. And so it's left for us to engage with what that means. And I think that the book is an effort to do that, say, okay, well, how can we actually kind of walk through some of that? And so this opening segment is designed to just kind of get that ball rolling and to help us think more critically about what it is that we're seeing and how we engage with that. I think we would both agree pretty pretty strongly that Jesus is an important person. And getting what we need to get right about him is really important. And maybe lose some of the things that aren't so important. We can set those things aside, such as his skin color or whatever the case may be. So Caleb, thanks so much for joining me today on the podcast, and appreciate your perspective. You know, appreciate the way you live your faith. I mean, I really do, and I'm grateful for you joining me today. And I'm grateful for you for finding the third space. As always, you can follow me and like me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. You can check out my website at bobfabe.com. There you can find a way to engage with me in a different levels. Also, you can go to amazon.com, look up Bob Fabe, or you can look up the book Not My Jesus. It's available in e-format, soft cover, and hard cover. Thank you so much for joining us today. I pray that you have many, many blessings. As always, you can follow me and like me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. You can check out my website at bobfabe.com. There you can find a way to engage with me in a different levels. Also, you can go to amazon.com, look up Bob Fabe, or you can look up the book Not My Jesus. It's available in e-format, soft cover, and hard cover. Thank you so much for joining us today. I pray that you have many, many blessings.